You're listening to the training podcast from PursueGod.org, the official training channel for pastors, small group leaders, and disciple makers. Find more resources to help train your church at PursueGod.org/training.
All right, well, welcome to the training podcast to all of our listeners. Pastor Ross, today we are going to be starting a five-week series that we're just calling Church Board Training, not the most original title we've ever come up with, but this is all about helping churches think through their governing structure, maybe even helping churches prepare new board members to join the team. This is a series that, boy, we would have loved to have had 5 years ago, 10 years ago at our church. And so we thought, well, let's put this together. We'll be putting this online at pursuegod.org on our training page. So I encourage folks to check it out, use it if it's helpful for, you know, bringing people on the team or even just thinking through the structure of your church. Let me just, Ross, before we jump into this first episode, let's just kind of talk through where we're going in this series, five-week series. Today, we're going to talk about key responsibilities of a church board. Next time, we'll talk about key responsibilities of a board member to include a conversation about knowing your boundaries as a board member. In episode three, we're going to talk about the relationship between the governing board and the pastor. In episode four, we're going to talk about the traits of a great board and some pitfalls to avoid on your board. And then in the final episode, we're going to get super practical. We're going to talk about the practices of a great board member. We're going to talk about how to run effective board meetings. And again, all of this, I mean, I don't know, Ross, wouldn't you say that this isn't, it's not like we're pulling stuff straight from the Bible for this. This isn't, we're not talking about, you know, eldership qualifications necessarily. We might touch on that here or there. We're talking about just like the practical, kind of bigger picture concepts and even some of the nuts and bolts of running a board.
Right, because actually in the Bible, there's nothing, the Bible doesn't specify how spiritual leadership works in practice. Not much. It doesn't say, oh, this is how they made decisions about that issue. And oh, you know, this is the process that, but in a cultural context like ours in modern America and other countries as well, but certainly here, there is an established expectation. We'll talk about that in a minute. A government has an expectation, and we want to live up to that. And we have a complexity. We have finances that maybe the early church, they didn't have bank accounts and all the rest. So there's things that have had to be developed based on biblical principles, sound biblical values that we've said, hey, this is what how a board has to function to avoid, you know, some catastrophes for institutions in the culture that we live in.
Yeah, and maybe it'd be helpful for us in full disclosure to, and even just for our listeners to know, like, how do we run our church? So let's start with that before we jump into, you know, the responsibilities of a church board. I think it's helpful for context. We have more of a senior pastor model. Everyone at our church has a boss, and one guy has the board as a boss. I'm the senior pastor of Alpine Church out in Utah. Governing board is my boss. And then, but our senior leadership team has the governing board plus the executive team. So the executive team reports to me. It's kind of the top of the org chart organizationally for us. So everyone in the org chart reports to essentially ultimately to someone on the executive team. And I report to the governing board. So that's kind of how we run it. Ross, I don't know if you want to speak just for a second to like why we have this sort of, it's a little bit of a different approach than some of the churches out there. And we'll talk about some of the other models as well.
Well, part of it is that we're in a very complex church, a large and complex church, a multi-site church. And, you know, we had some challenges that we had to solve. And we got some help from outside, from other pastors who have experience with this. That helped us figure out, oh, we've got some inherent weaknesses in our governing structure. We had to clarify some things and make some things work better, so that people had multiple bosses and, you know, organizational clarity was really big, and it's been big for us. So this is how we kind of came up with the structure that we have. The leadership structure that we have is more clear than it was in the past, and right? You know, I'd say, Brian, would you say that in the last couple of years, it's really been working very well?
Yeah, I think so. And, I, you know, every church has to make their own decisions. But I think for us, you know, Ross, I planted the church over 20 years ago. You were originally one of my overseers as a pastor of another church in the area that I respected. And because we're non-denominational, I wanted to have some structure and some oversight. But as our church grew and became multi-site and more complex, we had to sort of revisit our structure because you're right, it was getting confusing for people. We were starting to get some sideways energy. It wasn't any particular person's fault. It's just we had to reevaluate what's the best, most biblical way to structure this so that we can move forward and accomplish our mission. That's where we landed. Again, maybe we have some listeners who are in that process right now, and I think this series will be helpful for them. You know, I think there are other models. Some churches might have a Presbyterian leadership model. Some churches might have congregational leadership. Some churches might use more team leadership or plurality of elders, and that's fine. Whatever you use, I still think that this series, today's lesson and this whole series is really going to be helpful for people.
Yeah, because even the model of leadership, different models of leadership that we could talk about, it's more of a continuum. It's not like there's this kind and this is a distinct separate kind. There's a continuum of leadership that takes place. And so the principles that we have, that we've learned, that we want to share, really are going to be adaptable to a lot of different kinds of scenarios.
Okay, so really, I think let's kind of jump into the lesson, Ross, then. I mean, I think at a 50,000-foot view, I think every church, every organization, every institution is going to have final authority, right? Somebody's going to have to be able to approve decisions like the annual budget or changes to the articles of incorporation or the bylaws or acquiring property or getting rid of property or building buildings or establishing staff positions or calling a senior pastor, dismissing a pastor or other pastors. There are so many decisions in the life of a church. And I think it's not realistic to say, oh, we'll just figure it out as it comes. Now, you need some structure to deal with this. A healthy church has thought this through, has a structure that's legally sound, but it's going to, I mean, I think really at the end of the day, Ross, it's going to place this authority in the hands of a godly, qualified group of individuals rather than just giving it to one person. So even in our case with our church, even though I'm the senior pastor, it's still not ultimately, it's important that I set vision and all these things, but ultimately it's not just me who's making these big decisions. I think a healthy church has a structure that will allow them to make these decisions in a biblical way.
Well, let's see, that's really good theology in a way, because we all understand that human beings are fallen. Even the best intentioned, even born again believers, even mature Christians can fall into different kinds of traps of ego, of, you know, perspective. Nobody's perfect. There's no leader that's perfect since Jesus. And so we look back in historically, and we look even at our own culture, we see that a lot of the problems that institutions and churches have happened because somebody's not accountable, or not even accountability, but someone doesn't have the perspective that is gained by being submitted to maybe some other wise and mature people. And so we're saying, hey, we take our theology seriously, the theology of human depravity and of human limitation, and say that we have to have it as a team. We have to work as teams, bringing different gifts into play. Again, to use the biblical idea of different spiritual gifts, then teams have the opportunity to bring all the different gifts into play. And not one person has all the gifts, and so gifts of the Spirit. And so it really makes sense biblically as well as practically. Because, you know, here's the thing. If something makes sense biblically, then it's going to have good practical fruit as well, right?
Yeah, so let's get into then some of the key responsibilities of the board. And today we're going to just go over five key responsibilities. Did I count right? I think five or six. We'll count it at the end maybe, Ross, but we're going to talk about... Let's start by talking about the board's duty and authority as it relates to the legal stuff, right? The board, again, it depends. We call it a governing board at our church. Other churches might call it elders or overseers, whatever language you use. But somebody, some group has to serve as the trustee of the corporation.
Right, because we live in a culture where there are laws that govern how organizations are to do their business, and the laws are there because they want to protect people. It's a stewardship. It helps us to be accountable to outside of ourselves. And so the board, you know, for financial management, for not abusing our donors and so forth. So the board acts as the trustees of what is, you know, we are a corporation. And typically most churches, unless you have some like anti-government status or some kind of really deep conviction about separation of church and state or whatever, then most churches in America will have been incorporated. Mm-hmm. And because most churches in America would like to have the IRS 501c3 designation to be able to give receipts to tax donation credit to their donors. And so we are, as a corporation, somebody has to be accountable to the government. And so the board, whatever, again, title you use, whoever those individuals are who are the governmental, you know, trustees, then there's a legal requirement to say we stand before the government, we stand for this entity, this organization. We're making sure the church complies with all legal requirements and making sure that, you know, the things are done above board with the government as well and with people. So that's the legal thing.
And so, Ross, that involves three general duties. Walk us through these three duties of a board member. Number one is what we just call the duty of care.
Right. That, you know, these titles may not make total sense intuitively, but they make sense when you play them out. The duty of care requires a member of the board to act in good faith, and they have to have responsible care. The care part is, does the board member have responsible care for the interests of the organization? So you're acting on behalf of the organization.
Now, the second duty is the duty of loyalty, which, I mean, you know, our governing board and our executive team, every year they have to sign a conflict of interest agreement. And this kind of, I think this speaks to the duty of loyalty, right?
Right. So the duty of loyalty, again, it requires a board member to act not only to care about the institution, the organization, but to act in the best interests of the organization rather than in their own interests. So I'm loyal to the institution. I'm not loyal to myself or to some clique or some, you know, kind of agenda that I have that's different, that's separate.
And then the third duty is the duty of obedience. And that's kind of a big term and a broad word. What does that mean when we apply it to a board?
Yeah, it's talking about obedience to a legal obedience, obedience to the law of the land. And so the duty of obedience requires a board to comply with applicable laws and to act in conformity with our own structure, obedience to our own governing structure, to our own policy documents. The board has to say, yes, we are going to follow our bylaws, or we're going to follow the policies that have been set in place, and we're going to follow the laws of the land.
Yeah, so this kind of keeps the organization from going rogue, right? That you've got your bylaws, you have your philosophy of ministry statement, you have your doctrinal statement, and the duty of obedience keeps the governing board or that leader, that highest level leadership team, from going rogue. Now, again, they can probably, like in our church, we can amend bylaws, we can amend even statement of faith, but it takes a lot of energy and effort, and there's lots of hoops you have to jump through to do that, which I think is helpful and protective to any organization.
Right, and it prevents, like you said, going rogue, which implies the idea that somebody wants to force an agenda, whatever, or gets, you know. But it also, the other thing that for probably more boards in this situation, it prevents a board from just winging it, which is like, oh, well, okay, whatever, you know, whatever happens, happens, and we'll just go with the flow. And so there's somebody who takes way too much responsibility than they have, and others who don't take enough responsibility. And this kind of helps to find the sweet spot.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so that would all fall under the legal category of the responsibilities of the board. And related to that is the second category, and it's just the financial. And we separated that because I mean, there's some overlap there, but the financial responsibilities of the governing board are really, it's really important to lay it out and make sure that everybody understands it.
Right. And so, you know, money's a big deal. Money is a provision of God for ministry, but money is the source of a million different conflicts, and it can become something that people get pretty upset about. And so it's the board's responsibility to ensure that the resources of the church are managed effectively. It's the board who's overseeing that process. Now, that may be the nuts and bolts of that may be delegated to a staff person or to a volunteer in a smaller church, maybe, but the board has the ultimate oversight and the final authority and responsibility regarding all of the fiscal operations and all of the property operations. And thus, that could include things like who's going to decide how and when to buy property, or how and when to sell property or assets, for example. The church has a van, or the church needs a van, whatever. Now, the board isn't going to be the ones who are going out to the car dealer and checking the internet for the van. The board's going to say, yes, we need a van. And so go get one. But so the board is managing those assets, maintaining them all. It's the board's ultimate responsibility to oversee and approve the annual budget, to make sure that staff compensation standards are set, that it's, I think, a big part of the board that many churches do, and maybe all churches should do, is to secure an independent financial audit on a regular basis. So these are the kind of things the board is making sure that financially that the church is on a solid footing and looking at all the aspects of that and what goes into that.
So let's kind of pull back the curtain on how that works at our church. So again, in our church structure, we have the governing board. Those are just attenders at the church. They're lay people. They're not pastors. Although I, as a senior pastor, I am part of the governing board. But then we have the second half of our senior leadership team is what we call the executive team. And so the executive team is in charge of the day-to-day operations of the church, whereas the governing board then has the legal authority and the financial authority to approve decisions. So they're not the ones thinking through when we need to open another campus. They're not the ones thinking through, should we buy this building? That's the executive team's job and responsibility. But when the executive team has a decision to make or a proposal, again, this is helpful for our checks and balances. They bring it to the governing board, and together we make a decision about, yes, let's do a campus in this new area, or yes, let's move forward and build a building for this campus. So when it comes to, for example, our church budget, our annual church budget, the executive team, led by the executive pastor of finance, who reports to me, we're the ones who are doing all the legwork to put together a proposed budget, right? Because we know what it's going to cost. We know the operational side of things. But then we bring that on an annual basis. We bring that before the governing board so that they can put some eyes on it. And ultimately, they're the ones who approve that budget.
Right. And so, you know, thankfully, the operations side that you described, the executive team, you know, people are, they're going out to our different locations and finding out what's it going to cost to fix that roof. And, and you know, what's the cost of our staff, for example? And then, but the board has a role of saying, okay, wait a second, here's how healthy we are financially as an institution, as a church. And here's the income stream that we've had. And here's the things that we, you know, are careful about. Here's how much debt we have. Here's where our loans are all, you know, how much can we afford to spend this year? Mm-hmm. And ultimately then that is the final budgetary thought that goes to that. So they approve a budget. Now, related to that, for example, I think in financial, this is an issue that is financial, but it's also missional, is that the board has the authority to approve any new staff position. Okay, so let's say we're going to add a member, or create a new staff position. Then the board is going to say, well, how does that fit our overall mission? How does that fit our priorities? And how does it fit our budget? Can we afford to add that new position? And then having done that, then it's up to the executive team and to the staff people to go say, who's going to fill that position? Mm-hmm. Who are we going to hire? You know, and maybe it's a position at each of our campuses. Who are we going to hire? The board isn't involved in the hiring. The board is involved only in the financial and missional oversight of whether or not that's a thing we should do.
And that's part of what churches need to define, like who has what decision rights. In fact, Ross, what we could do in the show notes today is we could share our decision rights document. Again, our organization's maybe a little bit more complex than some organizations of our listeners, but you know, a lot of this still can apply. Some of you might be just pastoring a smaller church. You're the sole pastor of the church. You still have a board. I think a lot of these concepts can still apply to you. It's helpful for you to have a board of godly, qualified individuals who can share the burden and make sure that you're making good, sound decisions as you move forward and as your church gets more complex in its structure. Maybe you have to make some changes, and maybe you have to add people to the board or include an executive team or whatever. Again, we went with an executive team plus governing board structure because we felt like it made the most sense to share those duties, the legal and financial duties for the governing board, and then the spiritual and operational duties for the executive team. But every church has to make their own decision.
Right. There's a lot of churches where those two could be combined. And that's a traditional elder board or whatever. In our situation, that's just too much work to put on, you know, a group of people, and it allows us to let people operate more in their gifts and their skills by working together in that way. So, but every church is going to have, and you pointed out, Brian, I think that's a good observation. And we experienced this when I planted a church prior to our involvement with you guys at Alpine. And that is, we went through some changes because the church grew and we had to cope with, we can't do it the same way we did it before because it's more complex now, or there's now issues. Oh, now we own property. And so we have some new factors that come into play. And so all of that comes in to be a part of the responsibility of leadership to say, how do we adapt and adjust to the conditions that dictate our lives right now?
Okay, so we've talked about the legal responsibilities, the financial responsibilities. The third category, we're just going to call it missional. Ross, walk us through what we mean in general terms about the missional responsibilities of the governing board. And then again, we'll kind of talk about it in our particular church structure and how it works with an executive team.
Yeah, we believe that actually the mission is what do we do and why? Okay, why are we doing what we do? Now, we believe that comes from the senior pastor or from the pastoral team at least, but certainly from the senior pastor who we believe generates the mission and vision for the church. But the board has to own that mission, and the board can steer it, can refine it a little bit and say, hey, pastor, what about this? What about that? But cooperating with the senior pastor to refine that mission and ultimately to fulfill it. We don't want, you know, people just talking about mission and arguing about mission. It's about fulfilling the mission. So the board has three activities that come into play when it comes to that. That involves planning, evaluation, and policy development. And so the board is going to adopt or approve short-term and long-term strategies to achieve the mission. And it's going to annually set priorities to implement the mission. And so some of that is definitely going to be in conjunction with the senior pastor. And we'll talk about that in a minute. The senior pastor is setting priorities. The board is also checking off on those and setting priorities from its responsibility to make sure that we're accomplishing the mission of the church. So planning, evaluation, and development of policy. What are some policy statements that need to be in place that will support us and not undermine us from pursuing our mission?
So part of what that means in our church, and I think probably for most churches, and this might be a new thing for folks, it's kind of a newer thing for our church as well, as we've tried to refine our processes, is the board makes sure that we're aligned, that our staff is aligned with its mission by holding my feet to the fire, right? To make sure that we're assessing a few different things. So for example, they're not just believing what I say. They're saying, show me the money, show me the data, show me that we're accomplishing our mission So they're helping me to assess the performance of our church. Now, we do performance reviews on staff. The board does my performance review because, again, in our structure, the board is my boss. But with everybody else in the church, whoever their direct report is, does a performance review. And the governing board is really the group that made sure that that was happening, because these guys are all guys who are leaders in the workplace, and they do performance reviews in their jobs. And in their case, they said, we need to make sure that we're checking in. Now, we're trying not to be too business-like when it comes to this. We're still refining this process. In fact, some listeners might really not, they might not be sure what they think about that, to do performance reviews. It sounds too corporate. And that's fine. Maybe as a church, you don't do something like that. But in our particular case, the governing board is my boss. And they said, we need to incorporate some sort of performance review. And we've been working that out and refining it and tweaking it, all to make sure that our mission is being accomplished. Because it's easy, right, Ross? It's easy for a church to say they have a certain mission, but then for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, not actually ever accomplish the mission. And so the board is there to help me make sure that I'm doing it.
Right. And so, I mean, so the board is doing other things along those lines to evaluate the performance of the church as a whole. And so we'll do what we call a risk assessment. And on our annual or every other year basis, we're saying, oh, what are some of the risks that the church faces? What's changing about our community? What's the nature of the financial situation in the place where we live? Other factors like that. To say, oh, these are things that could blow up our mission if we're not careful. So we want to make sure the church is careful. So, for example, the staff recently said, hey, we need to have some safety protocols on Sunday morning. Who's in charge of making sure that? Wait, what if somebody has a heart attack? What if somebody shows up and starts to shoot? Well, all of that ultimately, the board has to say, yeah, here's what we're going to approve along those lines. And you guys do the legwork, but we're going to make sure that fits in the overall picture of how to be successful as a church.
Okay, so that was missional. So Ross, we've covered legal, financial, missional. The fourth category, we're just going to put under the heading of senior pastor. So this is... And this is, I think, something we're still working out. What does this mean? How does this work? But basically, the board is maintaining a supportive and collaborative relationship. We're not trying to create this animosity between the board and the senior pastor, but they're also not yes men for the senior pastor. So there's a balance there of how does the board support the senior pastor while still holding him accountable and being his boss?
Yeah, this might be one of the trickiest things for boards to get, for churches to figure this out, because it takes some submission on the part of the senior pastor, and it also takes some submission on the part of the board members to be able to have that supportive, collaborative relationship at the same time as holding him accountable for his duties. And so we'll spend a whole episode talking about this in lesson three, because it's so much that's involved in there. But in a nutshell, we talk about today the responsibility of the board. Now, in our situation, the board can ultimately fire the pastor. And so that's part of the accountability. Now, we're going to talk about, again, when we get to lesson three, talk about boundaries on that. We want that to be safe for the pastor. You know, we don't want the pastor to feel like, oh, no, if I have to compromise what I believe in order to keep everybody happy. So the board, on one hand, should not just be, like you said, a bunch of yes men. We don't want the board just to rubber stamp the pastor. That's not healthy. But it's also not healthy for the board to micromanage the pastor. Or some boards feel like, well, somebody's got to be the naysayer. Some boards feel like, oh, it's our job to oppose the vision of the pastor and mm-hmm. keep him in his place. Mm-hmm. And neither one of those. So somewhere in here, there's a sweet spot, and it's hard to get to because of all the factors that are at play. And so this is what we're trying to get to. And this is one of the responsibilities of the board in situations where the senior pastor is ultimately accountable to the board in some sense. And that could be more, it could be less. But because of that relationship, this is really something the board has to figure out how they're going to do it.
And again, we'll talk more. We'll dive into this. We have a whole lesson committed to this, dedicated to this, and that'll be lesson three. We'll get into that some more. But Ross, there's one more responsibility that we need to talk about here of the governing board in general, and it is for the overall well-being of the church. So that the board is responsible to maintain the health and integrity of the church. And there's several ways. This is we're going to kind of get into somewhat spiritual stuff and somewhat, you know, legal stuff, right? But part of that, first and foremost, is to just be committed to pray for the church.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this goes back to those things. We talked about the duty of care. We talked about the duty of loyalty. This is a practical way of describing what that all looks like. The board maintains the health and integrity of the church and of itself, by the way. Over well-being, the well-being of the board is going to affect the well-being of the church. You mentioned prayer. Prayer is number one. So, you know, we'll talk about how prayer enters into a board meeting in another session. But board members just need to be committed to praying for their church. Why? Because they love the church. Board members have to really love and care about the church and ultimately everything the church represents. So, along with prayer, then it's the members of the board who are part of their care for the overall well-being of the church is that they're promoting the church's mission and values. They're modeling the church's mission and values. So, for example, one of our values at Alpine Church is that we make disciples who make disciples. And so if a board member to sit on the board, we're going to vet you to find out whether or not you're actually doing that in somebody's life, right? And if you're not doing it, we're going to coach you. If you want to do it but don't know how, we'll coach you how. But we want board members who care about the church enough that is saying, hey, these values, these practices, they matter, and they matter enough that I'm not just going to vote accordingly, but I'm going to live that way, okay? So that's a big part of the well-being of the church is how you're living it out. And then more on the board structure part, the board is ensuring, I mentioned risk management. That's part of the overall well-being of the church. And so doing risk management assessments. I think keeping the church's governing documents updated and ensuring that they're followed. It's one thing to have policies. It's another thing to follow the policies. And then also just regularly assessing and improving the board's own performance to say, how are we doing? Are we being a great board or not? And we have we'll talk about what that means again in the episodes that follow. But in other words, it's a board to be on the board. You want to say, look, I care about the church. I'm invested in the church and the things that we're trying to do, and they matter to me.
Okay, so those are the five categories. It was five. I was right the first time. Five categories for the board in general: legal, financial, missional, the responsibilities with the senior pastor, and the responsibilities for the overall well-being of the church. Rots, I think it's helpful for us maybe at this point to finish this episode by talking about this from a biblical point of view, because some people are listening to this saying, where do you find this in the Bible? And again, we mentioned that part of this is legal, part of this is related a little bit more to the government. And if you're an institution, if you're a nonprofit organization, you have to have a board. So some of that is legal and whatever, depending on the state that you live in, the country that you live in. But let's finish by just kind of tying this into what the Bible says about elders and biblical leadership in general. How does this whole thing mesh with the biblical authority of elders and even the role of deacons that we read about in the New Testament?
Well, see, this is the challenge in applying biblical principles in our modern context. The challenge is because, honestly, the Bible doesn't talk about boards. The Bible talks about elders or overseers and shepherds. Those are three things that talk about synonymously. The Bible talks about deacons and the role of deacons, but it doesn't say that, oh, this is how you govern. It doesn't say this is how a board works. There's no such thing as a governing board in the Bible. There's no such thing, honestly, as an elder board in the Bible. There are elders, and so we have to try to figure this out. This is one reason why there's many, many different approaches in churches that honor the Bible. Bible-believing churches have different approaches to how they structure government. And some of that is historical. They maybe evolved or they came to maturity in a time when a certain practice was common in the culture around them. And so the thing is like, okay, you have elders and you have deacons. In some churches, it's the deacon board that is the governing board. In other churches, it's the elder board that's the governing board. And you know, you can see it both ways. Both of those seem to fit in some ways. And we can go into that a little bit as we go.
Yeah, so in our particular church, we recognize that the senior leadership team, which again, in our case, consists of the governing board members and the executive team members, and then we have the staff is another part of our structure, but the executive team plus the governing board makes up the senior leadership team. That comprises about 10 men. And in our church, in our case, as we prayed through this and searched the scriptures, we believed that these people needed to be men. We're a complementarian church. And so as we studied these passages, and we'll share these passages down below, but I'm sure you know what we're talking about. As we studied these biblical passages, we wanted to be true to God's word. And so in our case, we felt like that these people needed to be men. Your church might have a different approach. Maybe you're more egalitarian. But the point is that we really did spend a lot of time wrestling with the biblical basis for what we ended up landing on in our church structure. And Ross, that's helpful because I think down the road, if churches don't think about it like this, churches might find themselves down the road with a church split on their hands because they didn't really prayerfully consider how their leadership structure was biblical or at least not unbiblical, right?
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, again, so there's different models of what that means. And so many churches have the governing board is a board of deacons, or sometimes called a board of trustees who are functionally deacons. And that's usually in polities where it's the pastor and the pastoral staff that are seen as elders. And so the pastor then has some spiritual authority, and the deacon board has this sort of legal authority. And you can see that, you know, you can see how the board is taking care of institutional needs, finances, policies, core documents, stuff like that. And those feel like servant, they feel like deacon type activities, right? And so for some people, there's the board of deacons, but then the pastor sets kind of apart from that and has a different kind of authority, a different role. Now, in other churches where people use the elder board, then they'd say, oh, the pastor has, that the elders also have a spiritual authority of some kind. And in many cases, they see the pastor as being the first among equals, one of the elders, and maybe the vocational elder. And that's because in the word overseer suggests some authority. In 1 Timothy 5, elders have responsibility, it says, to direct the affairs of the church. And so that seems like a governing board kind of responsibility as well. So ratifying a budget implies some authority over the mission or the priorities of the church. And so if the board has authority to ratify a budget or to, you know, fire a senior pastor, to hire the new one, whatever, then that implies the highest level of eldership type authority. So you can see how, you know, kind of both of those fulfill aspects of the sort of the biblical job descriptions of elders and deacons. So we don't fit into either of those categories necessarily in how we do it.
All right. Well, we covered a lot of ground. This was episode one, key responsibilities of a church board. And maybe some of our listeners are, you know, somebody shared this podcast with them and you're not familiar with how the Pursue God resources work. So let me just encourage you with some ideas about how to use this in your church. If you already have a board, I encourage you to go through this series with your board. You know, Ross, with our church board, we meet every month. And usually we try to pick a topic from pursuegod.org and we send out the topic. The way that our podcast discipleship content works is everyone listens to the podcast episode ahead of time so that the teaching element is already done. So that when you come together for your Bible study or small group or board meeting, you can spend 30 minutes to 60 minutes using the questions and having a conversation about what everybody listened to. And that's how the Pursue God resources work. And so to use this church board training series with your board, just make a commitment over your next five meetings to go through this series just like that. You can find the resources, the show notes, everything we've been talking about, additional documents that we'll be sharing throughout the series. You can find it all online at pursuegod.org. Just go to the training topic and you'll find this series there along with so many more series for you to use to, you know, to equip your church to make disciples. That's what the Pursue God resources are all about. And then we invite you to join us next time for episode two in the series, where we're going to talk about key responsibilities of an individual board member. We'll see you then. Hey, listeners, this is Brian Dwyer reminding you to rate this show on your favorite podcast app. That really does help us when you do that. That way more people can discover this podcast and start listening. And also, don't forget to share the podcast with a friend.